My dad was a superintendent, I told the guys last night, of the largest die casting plant in the world back in the 40s, 50s. And his job was to oversee that plant. You probably don't remember this, most of you, but the die castings were the moldings and the bumpers and all that on the automobiles. Today they're all plastic. Back in those days it was zinc. And a lot of those parts were made at that plant. It had about a total of about 30,000 employees. It was huge. And the suppliers to Detroit, American Motors and Chrysler and Ford, and back in those days, American Motors as well, which is out of business now. So I grew up in that. And my dad made a good paycheck. He got a good pay. He did very well. And he'd come at the end of the month and give my mother the paycheck. She'd sit down at the dining room table to pay the bills. Back in those days, you didn't have credit cards. You had charge accounts. Every store had its own charge account. I can remember my mother would drag me downtown Toledo, and I was probably 8, 9, 10 years old, to open up a new charge account at a store. And she'd get a metal plate about the size of 2 postage stamps for that charge account at that store. It would come in a little leather pouch with the name of the store on the pouch. I would look in my mother's purse, and her purse was full of those little leather pouches. She probably had a charge account for every store in Toledo and probably within a 150-mile radius, probably including Ann Arbor. And she'd sit down, dining room table, pay those bills. And I'd sit and watch her do that. I was captivated by that. And every once in a while, she'd break down and begin to weep because she couldn't pay all the bills. And she'd say, I'll give this one 10 this month. I'll pay this one 5. I gave this one some money last month. I'm not going to pay him this month. And I'm sitting there watching that. And I have a hard time understanding. I understood that my dad made a good salary, but I couldn't understand why my mother couldn't pay the bills. That really bothered me. Now I'm 12 years old. My cousin Dorothy graduates from Moody Bible Institute and feels called to Costa Rica as a missionary, and she was raising support. So she asked my mom and dad if they would be willing to support her. Mom and dad sat down at the dining room table that night to talk about it and came to the conclusion they couldn't afford to support her because they were too badly in debt. That stunned my mother. And I can remember sitting there watching her break down, begin to weep. So left the dining room table, went into the bedroom. I could hear her in there. And I remember getting up, walking in the living room, and I said to myself, something's not right here. Godly parents, godly home, involved in our church up to our eyeballs, but obviously not really good at handling money. I can remember saying to myself, I'm not going to live like this. Now we fast forward. Met my wife in high school, future wife. We were engaged for a year and a half. And while during our engagement, I said to my wife one day, we're going to put a financial plan together for our marriage. So when we got married, we had a financial plan laid out. And we have lived that financial plan for 54 years. It's been a wonderful marriage. Yeah, we both know Jesus Christ, but we've lived the financial plan and the principles that I teach. Yeah, we've changed it. Changed it probably 1,000 times. But these are the principles we've lived by. And I'll tell you what, it's been a great marriage. Money has never controlled our life. Money has never controlled our marriage. We've always had positive cash flow. We've never been upside down. Credit cards have never controlled our life. We've used credit cards. I've never paid a dime of interest on a credit card. It's a tool. All it does is float the cash between paychecks. That's all it does. And when I stand up here and teach you what I'm going to teach you, if I didn't live it, I would have no business teaching it. And so what you're going to get is just a brief overview, and I trust it will be helpful on how we live and how those principles really helped our life. I have a CD set over there I brought with me. There's 2 CDs there. The first CD is the details of the family finance, and then the second CD is the estate planning stuff. And there's a study guide there. I make them available. I wish I could give them to you. They're $20, but they're there. If you buy a set, you can reproduce it. I don't care. Share it with your neighbors and friends. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to get it out there. MacArthur made me do it. He called me one day, get down to the studio and record those seminars. They're really important. So I did. So we make them available. All right. I want to introduce this thing. Is it Huey? Who's doing the CDs? Are you doing them up here? You're doing them. How can you do it sitting there? Okay. I'm in the dark ages, so... All right, let's do the preamble. We're experiencing the most difficult time. We'll do that one. Are we facing economic Armageddon? I don't know. Nobody knows. We're approaching $21 trillion of debt in this country, folks. $1 trillion is a 1 followed by 12 zeros. We're becoming a cashless society. Look it up here. 1996, 80% of bills were paid by cash and checks. 2013, and it hasn't changed since 2013, 14, 15, 16, 20% of bills are paid by cash and checks. 80% of bills are paid online and by credit cards. U.S. debt in 95 was $6 trillion. 2015, 19.5 trillion. Today it's approaching $21 trillion. It doubled over the last administration, more than doubled. Who do we owe money to? $1.5 trillion to China, $1.6 trillion to Japan, $600 billion to Russia. 2007, we didn't owe Russia a dime. America's borrowing money, people, from foreign countries. A lot of people don't know that. They're not aware of that. What's the difference between a million, a billion, and a trillion? Take $100 bills. Take a stack of 100. 100, $100 bills, 10,000. 100 stacks, $1 million. You could put that in a fair-sized shopping bag. 100 million in the shape of a cube, 3 by 3 by 3, would fit on an industrial pallet. $1 billion would fit on 10 industrial pallets. $1 trillion would fill 10,000 pallets and would fill the floor of a fair-sized warehouse. That's mind-boggling. Let's put it in terms of seconds. A million seconds ago was 12 days. A billion seconds ago was 32 years. A trillion seconds ago was 32,000 years. You got that? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We're 32,000 years in terms of seconds times 21 in debt in this country. Talk about capitalism. This is the most successful story in the history of the world. I said that first hour. We're capitalistic. We're free. We're free market. That's what makes America great. Free market goes through cycles. Cycles are healthy for the system to work efficiently. There's been historical recessions. A recession, you know what GDP is? Come on, UCLA grads, what's GDP? Gross what? Attaboy. What's gross domestic product? The sale of all goods and services in a culture over a period of time. It's measured monthly, quarterly, annually. Go down to Starbucks, buy a cup of coffee, gross domestic product. Buy a tank of gas, gross domestic product. Buy a suit of clothes, gross domestic product. Pay your tuition at UCLA, gross domestic product. Pay your tuition at Masters University, wouldn't even apply because it's so cheap to go there. Well, if you believe that, I got some swampland in Florida I'd like to sell you. When you have two consecutive quarters, six consecutive months of negative growth in gross domestic product, that's called a recession. You want the economy to grow every month. When you have six consecutive months of decline, that's called a recession. Let me tell you how rare recessions are. We've only had six recessions since 1960. Only six. Only six. Recessions are healthy. There's the recessions. 60-61, first one lasted 10 months. That's the John Kennedy spending policies. That's what they blamed it on. 73-74, that was the oil crisis. That lasted 16 months. Many of you weren't alive then, but back in that recession in 73-74, there were gas lines in this country, people. Remember that, people, that you're old enough? If your license plate ended an even number, you could buy gas on an even number day. Odd number day. We were coming from Ohio to Los Angeles to work at the Los Angeles Baptist College, now Masters. We got stranded in Flagstaff because we couldn't buy gas. Number three, 80-81, that lasted 22 months. That was the Iranian Revolution. Oil prices went through the roof. Fourth one, 1990, that lasted 8 months. They don't know what caused that one. 2001 was the fifth one. That lasted 8 months. That was the 9-1-1 attacks. That's when the accounting scandals jumped out of the closet and the dot-com bubble busted. Little trivia. I was scheduled on the plane, Flight 175, to hit the South Tower. How do you like that one? 2 months before the meeting at Cape Cod, the pastor called me, Jim Stewart. You know Jim? He called me and we postponed the meeting for a year. He's told that story all over the country. He called me that Wednesday, Jim. I said, yeah, I know. Believe me, I know. That was 2001. 2007? One we just came through, that lasted probably 50 months. Housing market collapsed, bank failures occurred. 6 recessions we've had. Let me say this. Recessions have helped make us great. Why is that? Free enterprise, free market has a tendency to overheat. Detroit builds too many cars. Contractors build too many houses, too many shopping centers. And it causes the market to overheat. That's when you have inflation. So you need a stop. You need a pause. You want it to be less than 12 months. The average recession is 12 months. So the average recession is healthy. The economy recovers itself and then takes off again. This last one was very severe. It was long and it was deep because it was so severe. Most of the problems we had in this last recession was created by two congressmen who forced lenders to loan money to people to buy houses they knew couldn't pay those loans back. Franklin Roosevelt had a statement after the Depression, a chicken in every pot. How many of you heard that? A chicken in every pot. That was coming out of the Great Depression. Obama had a saying, a home in every family. That was his saying, a home in every family. You never heard that publicly, but he said it privately many times, a home in every family. So that bill, sponsored by those two congressmen, forced lenders to lend money to people to get into homes they knew couldn't pay those loans back. So the time clock started in the early, about 2006, 2007, and it manifested itself from 2007 for about 50 months. The worst recession of my life, wasn't it the Great Depression, but it was the great recession of my lifetime. Go to the next one. No, not that one. Come on. Yeah, no, we did. No, that's all right. That's okay. Let's do that. All right. Okay, 14 steps of financial freedom, all right? 14 steps of financial freedom. Number one, give God a chance first, Psalm 37:7. So I think you got, didn't you get these handouts in the mail, 3 of them or so? And you started the fire in your fireplace with them, didn't you? Made them into paper airplanes. That's all right. Psalm 37:7, give God a chance first. People, part of our creative makeup is with an emotion. Learn to control your emotions, particularly when you spend money. Here's how my wife and I do it. We live by the Valencia Mall up in Newhall. We go to that mall. Sometimes we go there just to take a walk. We walk into a store we weren't planning on visiting. We see something we want to buy that costs more than $50. We leave the mall, take one more walk around the mall before we make the purchase. The minute you leave the store, you've taken the emotion out of it. Learn to control your emotions. There have been hundreds of times that we never got back to the store. Real important purchase, right? Yeah. It takes the emotion out of it. Control your emotions. Salesmen go to seminars to learn how to play on your emotions to sell you stuff. We don't go to seminars to learn how to resist that. How they set up the markets, how they set up the supermarkets, it's all done to get you. You ever go in a supermarket and have them playing slow music? No, it's fast music. No, I'm sorry. Have them playing fast music? No, it's slow music. Why? They want you to take your time walking through the supermarket or through the store. Where are the sales items? Are they at eye level? No, they're at higher shelf or in the back of the store. Where's milk? Where's bread? Typically, back of the store. Why? They want you going down 2 aisles. That's just all how they sell. Number one, give God a chance first. Number two, learn to be a saver. Learn to be a saver. Proverbs 21:20. NIV says a wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends whatever he gets. Learn to be a saver. This morning in morning worship, you learn to be generous. You get paid, give some to the Lord's work. Number two, give some to yourself to plan for a future need. You should always put money away for yourself every time you get a paycheck. Maybe to build your retirement plan. Maybe to build your emergency fund. Maybe to save money for that trip you're going to take. If you do 1 and 2, it'll dictate what you do with the rest of the money the rest of the month, and it works. Number three, learn to spend less than you earn. Learn to spend less than you earn. Proverbs 21:20 again. In Proverbs 13:16. Proverbs 13:16 paraphrase says, a wise man thinks ahead, a fool doesn't and even brags about it. Learn to spend less than you earn for a long time. When my wife and I got married, we set our budget. We set the expenditure side of our budget. This was our income side. I was in the automotive industry. So here's the expense side. Here's the income side. Our focus was building that gap, that positive cash flow. I got a raise in salary. We kept the same standard of living. I got a second raise of salary increase, same standard of living. We got a third, then we bumped ourselves a little bit. Our focus was to build that positive cash flow. Most people in this country live like this. They live off of credit cards. 61% of people in this country carry their unpaid credit card bills from month to month. They're paying interest on credit card debt. 61%. Mind-boggling. Mind-boggling. Learn to spend less than you earn for a long, long time. Number four, you don't finance pleasure items. That was one of our principles in our financial plan. Don't finance Proverbs 21:20 again. You don't borrow money to have fun. We don't, hey, I love football. I love to see Michigan beat Purdue. It's just an automatic. It's automatic W. Except one time. You had to remember that, didn't you? No, really. No, I've gone on great. I like to hunt. I've been in Montana and Wyoming. I love hunting trips. My wife and I have been on great vacations. Never borrowed a dime to do any of that. We don't do that. Do we use credit cards in those trips? Absolutely. Absolutely. That floats the cash. That credit card never comes out of our wallet unless we know we can pay the bill and we get the bill. We don't give the credit card industry a dime of interest. That's been our principle. Number five, have cash in an emergency fund. Proverbs 21:20 again. Have some money put away that you can get it when you have a legitimate financial emergency. That's number five. When my wife and I got married, our financial plan said we're going to put 50% of our cash wedding gifts into a savings account to seed our emergency fund. We got $1,000 in cash wedding gifts. $1,000 in cash wedding gifts in 1963 was a lot of money. $1,000 cash is a lot of money today. We put $500 into our emergency fund savings account. Both agreed we wouldn't touch it unless we agreed it was a legitimate financial emergency. Our goal was to build that thing every year. Didn't take us long to get it to $2,500. Then we got it to $5,000. Then we got it to $10,000. We took the other $500 to spend it on our honeymoon. In 1963, a $500 honeymoon was a nice honeymoon. Today it wouldn't get you out of town. It's not very far. Number six, control your credit cards. Control your credit cards. Proverbs 13:16. Where's that credit card sheet at? There you go. You're pretty good with this thing. Yeah. You must be a Michigan grad. Is that right? There's 800 million different credit cards in service today. 800 million different. 200 million are used every day. There will be 200 million different credit cards used in the 50 states today. How much is being charged on credit cards? 2001, 670 billion. 2010, that's an old number. 2016, it's around $2 trillion. The last year I got, it's around $2 trillion being charged on credit cards. How much is owed on credit card debt at interest? About 800 billion. At interest on credit card debt. What's the interest rate on that $800 billion? It's about 17%. Well, you say, I can get a credit card for zero interest. Yeah, right. Miss a payment. See what happens to that zero interest rate. Miss a second payment in a row. See what happens to that zero interest rate. It'll jump to the teens really quickly. Average interest rate on the debt of $800 billion to those people that's beyond the grace period is around 17%. Take 17% times 800 billion, divided by 365 days, and you will discover the credit card industry takes in about $373 million a day of interest income only. That's Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays included. Today, the credit card industry will take in about $373 million of interest income. It's a cash cow. It's a cash cow. And people are the cows. Average number of credit cards per household that has that debt, 6. I took a friend of mine to lunch not too long ago, and I said, I used that statistic. He said, no, he said, I don't believe that. Not 6, maybe 2 or 3, but no. I said, get out your wallet. He had 11 credit cards. Isn't that right, John? No, it wasn't John. It wasn't. 60% carry their unpaid balances from month to month, about 61%. 61% of the people in this country who have credit cards are paying interest on credit card debt. That's staggering. Credit card industry statistics say to them, once they get somebody $800 in debt in a credit card, they probably have them for life because those people aren't disciplined to pay that credit card off. And if they try to pay it off, by the time they get down to zero, they'll put another charge on that credit card. It's a cash cow. It's a cash cow. I'm speaking in Seattle. Guy comes up to me and says, I'm in a dilemma. I said, this happened about 8 months ago, 9 months ago. I said, what's your dilemma? He said, well, a thief broke into our house and stole my wife's credit cards. And I said, when did this happen? He said, about 3-4 months ago. I said, what did you do? He said, well, that's my dilemma. I said, didn't you cancel the cards? He says, no. I said, why? He said, the thief spends less money than my wife. That's a joke, okay? That's a joke. Number seven, have adequate life insurance to protect your loved ones. I'm a term guy. Now, there is time for whole life insurance, but typically it's term. Our first child was born in 1965. I immediately went out and bought a $500,000 10-level term policy. 10-level term. Coverage stays the same for 10 years. The premium stays the same for 10 years. The longer you buy an insurance policy for, the more the premium is. The older you get when you buy insurance, the more the premium is because the insurance company is taking risk. Because the older you get, the chances are greater that you're going to die. That's called the actuarial tables. Well, I wanted to buy the cheapest product with the most insurance I could find. So it was a 10-level insurance policy, 1965. I did it for 10 years. I was 24. Did it from 24 to 34. I found out that the biggest increase in premiums was the decade of my birthday. So I didn't wait till I was 34 to renew that policy. I renewed it at 29. I went from 29 to 49. I went to a 20-level term. It costs more money because I'm buying an insurance policy that stays in place for 20 years, not 10 years. Well, how could we afford that? That cash flow. That was the advantage of that cash flow. We were building that buffer to give us more positive cash flow as our marriage got longer and longer. Went from 29 to 49. I went from 39 to 59. I renewed it when I was 39. I went from 49 to 69. I went from 59 to 75. I only got a 16-level term. Because I determined that when I hit 75, I'm self-insured. Don't need life insurance. Homes paid for, cars are paid for, pension plans funded. Why do I need life insurance? That's how you do it, people. That's how you strategize that. That's why it's important to get some decent counsel, especially from a guy that knows what he's doing, an insurance guy. That's what they're supposed to do. That's 1 Timothy 5:8, number 7. He who provides not for his own, especially for those of his own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel, worse than an unbeliever. That's a strong verse. Number 8, be self-insured for life insurance. Number 9, have retirement plan progress by the time you're 40 years of age. Go to the retirement schedule there, young fella. You're getting closer. Getting closer. Getting closer. There you go. You are pretty good. So this is how you project your retirement income. I call it the 80% rule. You're working now. You want 80% of your income now when you retire, assuming you have a home paid for. 80% of your income when you retire. Let's say this guy makes $50,000 a year. Now, that's not a lot down here, I understand, but I'm all over the country. This is just an example. This guy makes $50,000 a year. He wants $40,000 when he retires. How's he going to come up with $40,000 a year when he's not working anymore? Well, start with Social Security. Listen to me. Don't believe everything the talking hairdos tell you on television. They're talking hairdos. Most of them don't have an IQ that even registers. They read from a script. I was watching a newscast the other day, and the lady was reading from the wrong script. Oh, hilarious. They're total idiots, most of them. Excuse me. I'm not. Is this being recorded?
We got you now.
Oh, man. Let's assume you get around $21,000 a year from Social Security, which is probably low. Social Security will be here. People, there are about 50 million senior citizens on Social Security benefits. You know what would happen if our government stopped sending out those checks? You would see a massive depression, not a recession. This is a global economy. Who do we owe money to? $1.6 trillion to China? $1.5 trillion to Japan? $600 billion to Russia? They'd call their loans. They'd call their loans. You can't honor your senior citizens who have paid into your program? What makes us think we're going to get our money back? They'd call their loans. And you know what? We couldn't pay those loans. Massive depression. That won't happen. Social Security is not that difficult to fix. Actuarial studies say 74% of Social Security benefits are pretty well guaranteed through this century. 26% is not. So it's a 26% problem. How do you fix it? When I was young, full retirement was age 65, Social Security. Then it went to 66. Then for some, it's gone to 67. They'll move it to 70. Some of you will not get your full Social Security benefits till you're 70. People, we're living longer. People are working longer. The system wasn't built on people living longer. When Social Security system was instituted by Franklin Roosevelt, the average lifespan was 58. Today it's 78. The system wasn't built on that. That's why it's having some challenges. Well, they can fix it, prolong the retirement age. Did you know that if you're out there working and you make a lot of money, you only pay Social Security tax on the first $128,000 of your income? When you hit $128,000, which a lot of people do in this country, especially here, up in the Bay Area, when you hit $128,000, say you hit $128,000 in September, you pay no more Social Security tax for the rest of the year. You pay Medicare tax on whatever you earn. If you make $1 million a year, you pay Medicare tax. That's 1.45%. Social Security tax on your wages is 6.2%. They'll increase to 128. They'll go to 138. They'll go to 150. They'll go to 200. That'll do a lot to fix the system. We just need some congressmen in Washington, D.C. with the courage to make the right decisions for the benefit of this country. Instead, every time they vote, they take a poll. They take a poll. Big deal. We should have term limits. How's that? Very quiet. So have a retirement plan in progress. By the time you're 40 years of age, I say earlier than that. You know what matching pension plans are? A lot of people work for corporations. I get these calls every tax season. Pastor says, call Jim. I got the call this last March. Jim, I work for IBM. If I put 6% of my payroll, of my salary, into IBM's 401k, IBM will match that. I put in 6%, they'll put in 6%. And he pauses. And he says to me, you think that's a good deal? I said, nah, that's a terrible deal. Why would you want to double your money for nothing? That's an incredible question. I told the guy, I said, you know what, sir? I said, your elevator doesn't go to the top floor. You're at least 2 quarts low. Or your kids will say, you're probably a few fries short of a Happy Meal. How's that one? That's an incredible question. 68%. Most of these percentages are in the 60%. About 68% of the people who work for companies that have matching pension plans don't participate. I have a friend of mine who's at HR for Boeing. 50,000 employees up in Washington. He does seminars to Boeing employees. 69% of Boeing employees do not participate in a Boeing match. That is stunning, absolutely stunning. Lack of discipline. Credit card debt. Yeah. Okay, number 9. Own your own home at some point. My wife and I's financial plan says we're going to owe our home when I hit 54. We're going to have a home paid for by the time I hit 54. People, we're creatures of habit. If you have a target, you'll hit it. If you don't have a target, you won't hit it. So our target, the day we got married, was we want to have a home paid for by the time I hit 54. We did that. I'm 75. I'm an old codger. We've had a home paid for over 21 years. You know what kind of freedom that gives you? Unbelievable. Number 11, have a workable budget, Proverbs 24, 3 and 4. Pull up the budgeting there, young fellow. Budgeting, all right. The exercise of preparing a budget is more important than attempting to control that budget. The process of preparing a budget defines who you are and what's important. You have to make some choices on lifestyle when you put a budget together, and conscious choices that you're willing to live with. Next one, the control aspect is mechanical. When the budget becomes inflexible, it's a taskmaster. when it's a guideline to be followed, it's a friend. You don't put it in concrete. My wife and I's budget change all the time. Circumstances change. Desires change. Things change. Kids come into the marriage. Grandkids come in. They've always got their hands out. Helps control debt when you have a budget. Number two, you earn cheaper interest rates because you have a good credit score. Allows you to save for the future. You budget savings. Number four, improves your relationship with your spouse. Biblical counselors. Biblical counselors like John Street, you know that name, at Masters. They tell me that 85% of divorces among believers start with money problems. 85% of divorces among believers start with money problems. Folks, you bring two people into a marriage relationship. One's footloose and fancy free, and one's very conservative. They're headed for a collision. You better get some counsel. That's why you have marriage counseling. That's why you have financial counseling, to learn to deal with that. That can be critical if it's not dealt with. All right, go to the next one. This is how you do a budget. I've done this for 54 years. It's a budget worksheet. Left-hand column, categories where I spend money. Top of the column are the months of the year. Round your spending off to the nearest dollar and account month by month for where your money goes by category. If you start the month of November, we're not far from November. You start the month of November with $400 in a checking account. You bring in $5,000 of new money. You got $5,400 to spend in November. The end of November, you got $200 left. You spend $5,200, $3,200. Where'd it go? Where'd it go by category? When someone says to you, I don't know where my money goes, what they're really admitting is they're poor stewards. Stewardship says, I know where my money goes and when it goes there. Listen, you do that worksheet for three consecutive months. By the fourth month, you begin to commit it to memory. Now, December's a challenge, obviously, because of Christmas. So that'll be an anomaly that month. You do that worksheet for three consecutive months. By the fourth month, you'll begin to commit it to memory, because we're creatures of habit. You do that for a whole year. You know where your money goes and when it goes there. I have 54 years of those worksheets. My wife is here. Take her outside. Ask us some questions independent of each other. How much money's in the checking account? She can tell you and I can tell you. What paychecks are yet to come in the month of October? She can tell you and I can tell you. What bills are yet to be paid this month? I can tell you in detail. She can come pretty close. If she doesn't know, she goes to the worksheet. I can tell you what bills are due in November. I can tell you the month of October is our biggest cash outflow month of the year. Why? I pay all my property taxes in October for the next year. Why? I want to deduct it on my tax return. When I had life insurance, I paid my life insurance premium in October. I paid the whole year's premium in 1 month. I pay my car insurance in 1 month because it's cheaper. But I know October is going to be a big outgo month. That's this month. We knew that last November. It doesn't surprise us because we have a budget worksheet. It tells us that. Folks, you can't make financial progress if you don't know where your money goes and when it's going there. People who make fun of budgets are idiots. Because it's important that you know where your money goes and when it goes there. I'm not opinionated, John, okay? Come on, that's stewardship. What in the world? All right. Number 12, I'm going to say this. Boy, you are pretty good. There is a difference between a debt and an obligation. I define debt a little bit differently than some people. There is no biblical prohibition to borrow money. None in this book. There is no biblical prohibition to borrow money. The verse that people, I've heard conference speakers say it's ungodly for a Christian to borrow money. That is baloney. The verse they use is Romans 13:8, owe no man anything. That verse has nothing to do with money. That chapter has nothing to do with money. The message in that chapter is if someone does something for you, be willing to do more for them. That's the message of that chapter. It's not a biblical prohibition to borrow money. I get this question. I got it just a couple weeks ago in a seminar. Jim, what do you do with the verse, neither a borrower nor a lender be? I said, that's good. Give me the text. He said, I don't remember. I said, I know you don't. That's Shakespeare. He's deader than a doornail, and he was never inspired. Give me a break. And obligation is money borrowed and repaid according to your agreement, like a mortgage. You borrow money to buy a home. You trust that's an appreciating asset. You have a monthly obligation to make that mortgage payment. If you can't meet your obligation, you had no business borrowing that money in the first place. Bad debt is credit card debt. You're paying interest on credit card debt. You're paying interest on food you've eaten, clothes you've worn, and trips you've taken. That's bad debt. That is poor stewardship. Those credit cards are controlling your life. Number 13, understand the tax law as it applies to you. Matthew 22:21 says, I'm to render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Watch out for tax protesters. They are ungodly people. We have an obligation to pay our taxes. People, we enjoy some wonderful benefits in this country that are funded by our taxes, and that's right. That's good. That's why we enjoy what we enjoy. Pay your taxes. Pay your taxes. I said this morning, my bedtime reading is Master Tax Site. Get a copy. You'll sleep like a baby. Or wake up every 2 hours and cry. All right. Number 14. We'll do this the next hour. Talk about that living trust. Why is it so important in California to have a family living trust, a revocable family trust? I'll show you that. And then we'll talk about that guardianship issue. Like I said earlier, I have a guy that I'll introduce to you. He's not here, but I'll tell you about him. He's willing to do your trust for you. He's a great, great, great help. Okay, go to the next handout. I think we covered, practical tips, okay. Okay, how would I conclude this with practical tips? Number one, have a budget. Number two, get out of debt. Get out of debt. Get out of credit card debt. Get out of installment debt. You people that went to college, you people that graduated from UCLA, you might have borrowed some money to get your bachelor's degree or your master's degree. Get rid of it. Pay it off. Well, I got a good interest rate. I don't care if the interest rate is zero. It's debt. Pay it off. Get rid of it. I spoke in the Master's College Chapel a while back. I hit that subject right there, and I said, hey, some of you are borrowing money to get your bachelor's degree. Nothing wrong with that. That's an investment in your future. Nothing wrong with borrowing money to get your degree. There's nothing wrong with that. That's an investment in your future. But pay it off. And I told him, I said, you guys that are falling in love with one of these co-eds, you both have education debt, get her a job. All the money she earns pays off your debt and her debt. If you break up, you're debt free, guys. The guys applauded. The girls did not applaud. Control credit card use. Number four, are you 50 with little retirement set aside? Get your head out of the sand. Get your head out of the sand. Do you have an up-to-date will and living trust? Number six, learn to procrastinate on discretionary purchases. People, don't be pressured into doing something you're not ready to do. Don't be pressured to do something you don't understand. You know what? There's no such thing as a dumb question. There's only dumb answers. There's nothing wrong with asking questions. I ask questions all the time. All the time. There's things I don't understand. Don't be afraid to ask a question. If you're thinking about doing some business with somebody and they're explaining something to you that you don't know what they're talking about, walk away from it. Walk away from it. I get a physical with my doctor. He talks in language. He's talking Greek. I said, Doc, you got to come down to my level. I don't know what you're talking about. Explain to me what you just said on that deal. Yeah, you better believe it. If you don't understand it, walk away from it. Number seven, buy a home, not a castle. Number nine, have an emergency fund and plan ahead for special events. How would I summarize biblical stewardship? Number one, start with generosity. Start with being generous. Give to the Lord's work. Number two, focus on taking care of the needs of your family. Number three, protect your family from a catastrophic occurrence, premature disability, premature death. Number four, plan for the future. Have a retirement plan. Have a will or living trust. Now listen to me. Credit card debt controls your life. You can't do any of those. If credit cards control your life, you're not giving like you should. You've got credit card debt. You're not taking care of the needs of your family like you should. You've got credit card debt. You're not protecting your family from a catastrophic occurrence, you're probably underinsured because credit cards control your life. And number four, you're not planning for the future. Probably don't have a retirement plan that's decent. Probably don't have a living trust. Why? Credit cards control your life. I'm not anti-credit cards. I'm anti-misuse of credit cards. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of it. There's probably a lot of it in this room. All I'm telling you is get your house together. Get your act together. Don't let credit cards control your life. It is a tool. Don't let it become a master. All right? Okay.